Welcome to Tough on Art, the podcast for artists interested in ways to get ahead in today's art market. I'm Jen Tough, owner of Jen Tough Gallery and the Artist Alliance community. Join me for some down-to-earth talk about the best ways for artists to navigate this new and different landscape. Hi, everybody. I am with Maya Stein. Maya, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jen. Thank you.
Where are you right now?
I am in Midcoast, Maine. So pretty far north.
Yeah. So everybody, I'm seeing Maya as we talk. You guys aren't seeing her, but she has this beautiful green tree behind her. And because I'm in New Mexico now, it looks so lush and shady.
That's right. Yes. Everything is just springing forth now. We're about a month behind everyone else. So now we're getting the bursting forth here.
Yeah, the bursting forth. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. So tell me about, let's talk about your background, who you are, what you've been doing your whole entire life.
No. My whole life. Wow. Well, let's see. I just turned 49. So that's a lot of decades to catch up on. But I will say that for the last, I've always been a writer for forever since I remember writing my first poem at about age 8 or 9. And that's pretty much what I've been doing since, is I've been a writer. I've been a writing facilitator, an editor. I'm kind of steeped in the world of words for many years now.
Awesome. And you started this project, which I found out about, at the beginning of the pandemic. So let's go ahead and dive into that. Sure. Tell everybody.
Well, obviously we were all kind of all on lockdown and trying to figure out what to do with ourselves. And I'm usually pretty good at entertaining myself, but I think there was the sense of panic and anxiety, kind of collective worry. And so I think I really needed something to distract myself from kind of overthinking about what was going on with the pandemic. And I discovered this wonderful Instagram account, this Dutch museum. It was a Dutch Instagram account. I'm going to pronounce the name wrong, but it's basically the translation was Art Under Quarantine. And it began a sort of movement of a museum at home, recreations of classic paintings. The Getty Museum hopped on with this challenge and invited people to basically limit their interpretations to 3 items that they would use instead of what the paintings had in them. And so I started off by doing that, by using classical paintings as the inspirations and recreating those. And then my wife, who was taking the photographs and helping me post, with kind of doing the art directing of them, suggested that I actually start using contemporary paintings as the inspirations for these reenactments. And thus began this project to find, contemporary painters and working especially with portraiture and recreating those. So it basically was, I was doing one of these a day. I will look forward to it every day to find the artist and painting that I would recreate. And eventually I had enough to put a book together. And so that's what I did. I had a lot of help from Danielle Crissa, who's AKA the Jealous Curator. She pointed me to a lot of different artists and folks I would never have necessarily found myself. So I definitely got a lot of assistance in terms of locating the artists that I was borrowing from. And the wonderful thing about working with contemporary art is that I could connect with the artists themselves, that I had a chance through Instagram to contact them and share the work with them. And so eventually I was able to work with them to put this book together and invited them to share their thoughts about their practice, what they were doing under quarantine, how they were managing, and just a little bit more about their work. And so interviewed the artists and then shared my perspectives on recreating their work and sort of the stories, memories it took me to through that process.
Yeah, I remember all of those you know, those reenactments of the old masters and things that people were doing with that Getty challenge. And it was such a great way to create community, you know, with people that you didn't know. And you, you loved seeing, I loved seeing all those sort of household objects that people were using, you know, like toilet plungers and, you know, colanders and all sorts of, you know, strange things. And I, what I really loved about it was the sense of humor that it sort of brought into everybody's situation and that sense that we're all in this together kind of thing. I mean, I think that those art challenges, the reenactments were probably, to me, the strongest thing that created community that they gave you, you know, people always said, well, we're in this together. But to me, seeing those reenactments were the thing that really brought that home to me, maybe give me that sense. And I love the idea that you did the contemporary artists, which no one had been doing. Everyone had been doing, you know, these more famous, you know, Renaissance or, you know, Baroque style paintings and things. But I love that you were doing contemporary artists.
Yeah, I think what was exciting about it was that I hadn't seen anyone working with contemporary portraiture. And, you know, there were sort of these go-tos that everyone was trying out, you know, like, you know, Mona Lisa and, you know, there were probably a handful that I kept seeing, which were really fun to try and recreate. But I think that you're right. I mean, this idea of this collective community around art was really amazing to me. This is not something that I really am that familiar with in my work. You know, it's typically fairly solitary. And so it just offered this wonderful sense of camaraderie and connection. And it didn't really matter what people, you know, which art people were choosing. It was just the idea that it was, there was whimsy, there was a joy and an aliveness and something, you know, that was really counteracting so much of the fear and uncertainty and real worry that people were carrying around daily. So it was such a way to deflect that and counteract it and really invite a sense of curiosity and, you know, lightness. And so I loved being a part of that and also, you know, having people look forward to what the recreations were going to be. I mean, really in getting people interested and involved and curious about art also in a new way.
Tell me about how you were feeling personally at this time, like, you know, before you launched into this project at the very beginning of the pandemic. What was going on in your life? And, you know, did you have to come home? Were you working in an office or what was that like for you?
Well, at the time, actually, my wife, Amy, and I were in the midst of doing a pretty big move. We had found our house in Maine, but we had not yet moved there. We were coming back from one of the things that we've been doing over the last several years is leading creative arts workshops all over the country. And we were in the midst of one of our little tours and we were down in North Carolina and Georgia. And, you know, we were not yet in our new home and we were just kind of in this transition. So we had to cut our trip short and we ended up moving in with my in-laws for 6 weeks. And that's where this project started. And in fact, I got them involved. We did Norman Rockwell's Barbershop Quartet. That was the first kind of group recreation that we did. And actually the first contemporary portrait that I reenacted was a portrait called My Family by Keith Meyerson. And I think I found him through the Whitney archives. And I found this wonderful portrait. There were a family of four that was like perfect for where we, you know, we were four of us living together. And it was just such a joy to get my in-laws involved because I can't imagine this is something that they would have necessarily done on their own, but they were so game to join in. And so it really helped all of us kind of connect too. You know, it's one of these things like I never imagined I'd be living with my in-laws for 6 weeks, but there we were and getting to kind of know each other in this whole other way was just very bonding for sure. So I was grateful for that time with them.
It must have been, I can imagine there was a lot of laughter involved with this when you guys were doing all of these, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, the thing is that we weren't in our home, so we didn't really have a lot of stuff with us. So Amy and I would, race through their condo and uncover our, accessories and things that we could use for the portraits. And so a lot of the early portraits that we did were involved, using their clothes. And, we used one of Amy's mother's bras for one of them. And, it was just kind of raking through their belongings, which they were very good about being okay with that. But they were kind of like, I think just happy that we were, it was just something for all of us to do and something for all of us to have fun around. And so they were great companions during that time too.
I think one of the things that I think people are going to be talking about for a long time into the future is, how people handled those first few months of the pandemic. Some people took on projects, which you did, obviously. Other people sort of just hibernated and watched TV and made sourdough bread. But you had a real focus, on, do you think that was, emotionally and intellectually helpful for you to have that kind of, big project where you had these sort of constraints set up? Did that help you during that time emotionally?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it was so easy to be so distraught by the news, and also the, real uncertainty of the virus and how, I mean, those were the early days. I started doing this project in, I think, late March and of 2020. And so really those were the early days, lockdown and, what was going on. And, did we have to, we were all leaving our mail out in the, in the garage for 3 days and, wiping down our groceries and stuff. And, there was just such this hypervigilance. And so I think I'm somebody who definitely kind of gets a little obsessional with projects. I've had a few creative projects that I've undertaken over the last 10 years. And once something sort of infects me with its joy, I mean, because joy is such a big, it really is the driver behind so much of these projects of mine, is it's gotta have some pleasure to it. It's gotta be a lift in some ways. And I'm just drawn to both the kind of intensity and the whimsy, this combination, this sort of intersection of joy and seriousness. And I think that those things really can coexist very beautifully. I think of the projects I've done over the years, they've been, kind of wild. In 2012, I rode my bicycle and towed a typewriter behind me for 40 days. I left Amherst, Massachusetts, and I rode my bicycle for 40 days to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And that was for my 40th birthday gift to myself, was to create this kind of traveling, unfolding piece of writing. So I invited people to, I gave them a prompt every day, and I had them, invited them to write to that prompt. And so at the end of the journey, I had this wonderful, I called it the Great American Poem. It was this beautiful collection of thoughts and musings and reflections and real just tender beauties. And so, there was a certain ridiculousness to that project, and that, you could get, there's faster ways to get to Milwaukee. But I really love this idea of slowing down and kind of having this much more meticulous, intimate experience with creativity. And so this particular, these reenactments were, sort of an extension of that kind of work, which is that you can get really granular with it. And I loved that there was sort of an endless trove of art to choose from and new artists to me. And, this kind of unfolding catalog of artwork to be inspired by. So, I mean, I would probably still be doing this project now if Amy had not gotten tired of me asking her to take photographs and to, be art directing. I mean, there was sort of a natural end to this, but it's one of these things I could probably pick up again just because there was such creative potential in
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So would you define yourself as a performance artist? Because now that you've told me the story about the bicycle and the, mm-hmm. with the typewriter and the, is that something that you would
I think that it's a part of me that probably comes out in these very, unpredictable times. I wouldn't say I'm a performance artist, but I think there's a performative element maybe not performative. It's just that it's intended for being witnessed. It's intended to be shared. It's intended to be participated in some way. And I mean, when I was doing this book project, I kept thinking about Cindy Sherman, who I've really admired for years, and just this, what kind of drove her to make these self-portraits and these film stills. And, it's just this, I would probably say she's a performance artist, but I think there's just this fascination with getting into character. And I think that these projects in some ways is a way for me to get into a kind of character that's a little outside in some ways of my normal day-to-day self. I write in this book about secret identities and, shadow selves. And I think we all have these people living inside of us that are probably braver and riskier and louder. And maybe the opposite is true also. I mean, if you're a person who's really an extrovert and who sort of is a more performative person, maybe there's a person inside of them that's quieter and more still and more reflective. And I think it's really, I love having the opportunity to connect with that self that is not the person I lead with all the time. And I think I just know that it's a kind of, it's like seasonal affective disorder. It's kind of like, it's this thing that sort of happens where you just are like, wow, I don't know why I'm feeling this, whatever it is, but I'm just going to ride it. I'm just going to keep going with it. And I think this feels like a sort of season, I wouldn't say disorder, but it's like almost like a seasonal, I'm infected with this seasonal appetite for stepping outside of my normal routine. And that's what I do.
So how did you go about finding the artists that you were going to depict in your portraits?
So I mean, a couple of ways. At first, I actually just sort of trolled the collections of modern art museums. I would go through, I would go through the Whitney and the Guggenheim and, some of the modern art museums around the world and see and find artists that were new to me. And then I did make a connection with Danielle Crissa. I mean, we've sort of been connected for a couple of years peripherally, but she sent me a message and she said, what about this? What about, what about this artist? And she had a couple of different links that she gave me of artists. And I think some of it was just, she wanted to kind of dare me to try something and see how I would do it. One of the first artists that she connected me to was an artist by the name of Naomi Devil, and who just does these kind of almost, I don't even know how to describe her portraits, but it's kind of like otherworldly mass, sort of S&M looking kind of, there's this one particular series that is kind of like these creatures from another planet or something. But there was just so much going on in these paintings that was just fantastic to try to recreate using whatever I had. And I think that's one of the challenges that Danielle posed to me was, sort of how crazy could I get, how out there could I get with these recreations. And so she really, I have to, give her a hand for all of the direction she gave me to visit some artists, I might not have encountered otherwise, and they were just a pleasure to connect with. So,
I saw that you had Sarah Detweiler in your, she's an artist that I know.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. So great again about connecting with contemporary artists was that we actually, got to talk, we got to connect, it was like a real exchange. And Sarah was one of the several artists that I really just had like this. I don't know. It was like we knew each other. I recreated one of her hidden mother portraits. And I had my own experience of, you know, I write about this in the book, of just what recreating that portrait sort of took me to. I am a stepmother of two boys, or two young men now, but because they are 20 and 22. But when I came into their lives, they were 11 and 13. And there was something about that series, Sarah's Hidden Mother series, that really reminded me of what step-parenting the first few years was like, of just kind of doing so much behind the scenes and not really getting the visibility of being somebody who was actually quite invested and involved in the kids' lives and really doing a lot of the legwork of co-parenting. And so, you know, I really connected with Sarah around that piece of my story. And, you know, that was such a great dialogue to be having, you know, to be in conversation with an artist about a subject that I probably normally might have written about in another way, but just through the experience of recreating her piece, it just, I don't know, there was just, it was something about feeling really seen and really understood by somebody else. And I think we had that kind of meeting of the minds about that. So it's a wonderful, wonderful connection.
What were the artist's reactions to your photos? How did you share that with them? And how did you just email them the images and then wait for them to, you know, respond? Or how did you do that? Did you get any input from them during the process?
I basically would just tag them in the post. So, I mean, I might have asked permission to use their portraits. I think nobody complained about it, which was great. I mean, it was kind of like, I made sure that, you know, I named them and I named their portrait and directed people to their sites and their Instagram accounts and stuff. So I always made sure to, you know, like name the source. And I think I'm just trying to think if there were any artists that had an issue. There were really none. Everybody seemed really delighted and moved by it. I think there were some, I think because the Museum at Home challenge was largely, as you said, devoted to classical paintings. I think that a lot of the artists had no idea that their work would be used, you know, would be the inspiration for someone else's recreation. So I think generally they were completely like gobsmacked that their work was being, you know, was the subject of this. So I had wonderful reactions from the artists and I loved sort of waiting to see what happened. I would just post the image and I would post their image and then I would post my recreation next to each other. And I just kind of wait to see what happens. And, you know, I would tag them and everything and I had no outcome in mind. You know, it was just for the sheer pleasure of doing this. And so anything that happened as a result, including their response, was a bonus.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they were thrilled. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? Like, that's such a massive compliment to have someone, you know, because I'm sure everybody remembers in the beginning of the pandemic how all of these, I think everybody, especially artists, were really enjoying seeing all of the, you know, the reenactments, and to have your own work on there and have somebody do that, you know, of your own paintings, is, I'm sure they were thrilled.
Which was great, which was super lucky. I mean, I suppose they could have been upset. I think that what perhaps surprised some of them was that I actually went to their, you know, through their archives. You know, it wasn't their most recent painting necessarily. There are a couple of paintings in there. I'm thinking specifically Serena Cole, a painting from 2008 that, you know, you would have to kind of dig to find. So I really, it's not that I like skimmed off the top of what they had just created. I mean, I really spent some time looking on their websites, kind of digging through their archives, finding, you know, because also there were sort of, in a way, restrictions in terms of what the content was. And there would have to be one figure in the painting, and there couldn't be a ton of kind of background. And, you know, there were some restrictions that helped me locate certain paintings to recreate. But I spent a lot of time really being with their work. And so it's amazing to me now, because I'm not someone who has historically done a lot of research about art. But now I can look, I can actually, you know, if I'm on Instagram, you know, a painting will pop up and I will know whose it is because I spent so much time with their work. So I love that I got a little sort of immersive art lesson as a result of this experience.
Yeah, I love that too. I love that, like, you know, the general public was looking at all this art and like in a different way and, you know, really dissecting paintings. And I think that's amazing. So tell us about some of your favorite ones that you did.
One of my favorites, this was like really a slimmed down part of the challenge. You know, as I said, with the Getty, you know, with the Getty part of the challenge, you were invited to use just three. You were kind of limited to three items. And there was one painting by Henrietta Dubray that I did. And it's kind of like, I just used two items. I used a pink cape and I used an ape mask. And it's a very sort of abstract painting, and it looks like a figure sort of turned away, or, you know, there's no distinguishing features. So that's, for some reason, that's one of my favorites. It was the least, you know, it had the least amount of props, but to me, it's kind of one of the more, you know, kind of, you know, creative part, you know, the sort of creative challenges was to how to retool these objects to mimic the painting, at least, you know, to some degree. I think there was a lot of use of makeup to help with certain aspects of my face that, you know, like I have super thin lips, and a lot of the portraits I chose, there were people with very, you know, substantial lips. And so Amy would give me a lot of trouble about that. And, you know, there were a couple things. We have a lot of costumes. And so, like, I loved that, you know, kind of going into our little Tupperware, not Tupperware, but it's, you know, just this big plastic bin of costumes. And there are things I always wanted to sort of figure out what to do with. And so there were a couple of wigs, and there were these pink leg warmers I used. And there were a couple things kind of kept reappearing. Like, I had this airplane blanket that I'd kept from the last flight we took, which was to London. We went to London for about 10 days, but this was November of 2019. And I had this airplane blanket. So it kind of made its reappearance in various portraits as a headpiece, as a skirt. You know, there's one of my favorites is a portrait by Catherine Longhurst. It's called Pilot Girl Revisited. And in the portrait, there's a, you know, one of these like kind of Amelia Earhart, you know, those caps, or I don't know, those pilot hats, I don't know. And we had a purse, a red purse that had that same texture, that sort of leathery. And so we had a pretty rough time trying to get my head to somehow fit in this purse, you know? So there were some physical struggles that are memorable. Yeah. I mean, it's fun to kind of leaf through the book and see, I mean, you know, creative use of underwear to look like sort of a spring garland. There was a by Erin Cohn called Spring, and she's got a sort of spring garland around her head. And I used various pairs of pink underwear to mimic the flowers and things like that. So, I mean, I think as the pandemic wore on, and in some ways the, you know, it's almost like the creative stretches got bigger, you know, somehow. And I can see this too, sort of mimicked elsewhere, that once, you know, once people kind of knew they were, had to stay put, they would probably, you know, it's like, so instead of just making bread, they would make their own pie crust, you know, they would stretch out into, you know, they would start to kind of push the boundaries. And I could feel that in my own recreations, that as time wore on, it was like, I would get a little bit more out there with the accessories. So I think that was actually a really interesting discovery, was the longer we were inside, sort of confined to our local real estate, the more I saw, the more things became artistic potential. You know, I can kind of imagine that if we were still in that situation in the same way, you know, it would probably only just increase, you know, the certain things would kind of take on, I would be able to see, to see their potential more as objects to use.
So when you first started this project, how long did it take before you realized, oh, I should sort of make this more permanent. I should document this in some way. I'm going to make a book. Or how long did it take before you realized that? And then when you did you start like, you know, creating for, you know, creating this book? Like every time you did a portrait, it was with that in mind. And then tell me about how you made the book. That's a whole other thing and how that went down.
Sure. Well, I think I did about 75 portraits. I think I had about 75 portraits altogether. And that was probably toward the end of last summer is when I kind of got to that number. And I, at some point, somebody on when I, you know, I'd post these on Instagram and Facebook, and a friend of mine said, when are you going to make a book? And so, you know, it was kind of like this, the response to these posts was sort of like, oh, you know, this might kick around for a while. This might, you know, I could sort of picture this revision this as this is a kind of a documentary for this time that we're in. This is a landing spot for this period of time that we're in. And it would be really amazing to formalize it, to sort of say, yeah, this happened, you know, and not, you know, not necessarily the terrible things, but it's like the creative output of this time. I wanted to document that. I mean, I was documenting it, but I wanted to at some point formalize it. And I think after having, I had about 75 portraits, and I thought, well, if I could get about 40 of these artists to agree to participate in the book, I would have a book. I wouldn't need all 75 of them. I mean, I wouldn't have to have the agreement of 75 of them. I would just, I would need a certain amount to kind of have a substantial book. So I just started putting it out there to the artists. I contacted them through their websites and through their emails and said, I'm thinking about collecting these, and would you be interested in participating? So the resulting number of 38 are the artists that agreed to participate. Some couldn't because of various contractual arrangements that they had with their galleries. There were some artists that didn't necessarily want their work in this format, in this content.
Yeah. I find that surprising. Were you surprised? No. Because I find that surprising. I think it's so complimentary. I think it's fantastic.
I have to say, I do find it a little surprising. And there was a secret part of me that thought, well, you know, I'm going to just keep going. And maybe at some point there'll be a second book and they'll say, okay, now I'm ready because now I see what it is. I think what was hard was for them to visualize perhaps what this book was. And at the time that I was putting it together, I really couldn't necessarily articulate it. I mean, it was definitely a photo collection, but there was this whole written piece to it because I was asking basically if I could interview the artists and get some more from them about their life, their practice, their pursuits, their body of work. And then there was my piece, which came later, which was that I was writing about each of the portraits and sort of where they took me to when I was recreating them. So all of that writing came later, and perhaps I wanted to kind of concretize as much as I could what this book would look like. But of course it was not easy when I didn't have so much of material completed. It was really just the photos. So I think in some cases, some of the artists didn't totally get what I was doing, and that's fine because there were plenty of artists that did, and so I'm delighted that they said yes. I was happy with the results. There are a few that I was sort of, oh, I wish, you know, because I go back now and look at the photos again and the posts and think, oh, I wish I had been able to get that artist to participate, but I'm really happy with who's here. It feels like great company. And I like the intimacy of it too. It's not, you know, it's not like a, I don't know. There's something about the I mean, it's substantial, but it's not overwhelming. And I think that it feels like a great kind of thickness of a book. It feels substantial and not overwhelming.
So how did the book building process go? I mean, that seems like such a daunting task. Did you seek out publishers? Did you venture into self-publishing? How did that go down?
Well, I've actually been self-publishing my work for a number of years. I have two collections of poetry, two collections of creative nonfiction. I recently edited a book, a collection of writings around grief that came out in 2019. And so I've been very used to the process of self-publishing and then having a very kind of intimate relationship, you know, in terms of how the book gets produced and what happens and shared and sold and everything. And I've been working the last couple of years with my good friend, Liz Kallick, who is actually now living here in she moved here from California in September to escape the wildfires. And she took up residency in our house. And, I was kind of thinking it was going to be like a week or so, but it's almost been 9 months. And so it was kind of great. It was having an in-house designer. She's an incredible book designer and artist. And both Amy and I have had some of our books designed by her. And so it was kind of a perfect storm of collaborations. And we have recently decided to launch our own small press because it's like all of the ingredients are right here under one roof. And the house that we live in was nicknamed Toad Hall by the previous owner, whose kids really loved The Wind in the Willows. And so our new press is called Toad Hall Editions. And my book, The Poser, is the first title that's coming out of Toad Hall Editions. But it's wonderful because we, you know, our goal is to help other folks who are wanting to get their books out there and not necessarily thinking or, you know, wanting to go through the process of finding a traditional publisher. I think that for myself, the incentive has always been just time. You know, when something feels like it's done, I want to see it sooner. I've been impatient with the process of going the traditional publishing route, which is, you know, finding an agent and, you know, trying to get the book sold. By then, I think the sort of verve for the project might be just long gone. And it's been very important to me to concretize projects and make books when things feel finished. So it's an enormous, you know, it's really a labor of love and not really, I wouldn't even say labor. It's just, it's a great passion of mine to bring work to fruition as quickly as possible without roadblocks. And some of the roadblocks are just, they're out of our control, but with self-publishing, there's this great opportunity to have things be out there sooner and to have much more of a connection to the work and how it's distributed and who reads it and how you talk about it. And, you know, there's a lot of work involved. It's not to say that it's easy or seamless, but there's a great sense of ownership over that experience and a sense of engagement and a lot more active, you know, proactivity in terms of how just of staying on top of what's going on and having a very direct relationship to the book, being incredibly invested in it. And, you know, each time I put a book in the mail and put it, you know, in an envelope and seal it shut and write my note, there's an incredible sense of pride and excitement that someone is getting a book, you know. And it doesn't matter if there's only, you know, we did a very small print run and hopefully we'll do another run of books, but every time I send it out, there's just this little feeling of glee that we did this. And I'm not sure I would get the same feeling if it was a mass-produced book that I didn't actually even have any control over where it was being sold or things like that. I mean, so
it was such a personal project.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the beginning, you know, having your in-laws be part of it. And then, you know, having a friend laying out the book and designing it and, you know, this sort of family, in a sense, project, you know, from one from the beginning to the end. So do you think that, do you have interest in doing more work with artists as for books, or what do you think about that? Because working with visual artists or.
Yeah, I mean, I would love that. I mean, with our small press, Toad Hall Editions, we're definitely open to working with artists and putting together other, you know, kind of books that don't necessarily fall into any particular category. You know, that's one of our big interests is to, it's funny, I was on a book review site this morning and there was a category called mashup. And I thought that was so great because it was kind of like, that's like a great way of calling, this book is a little bit of a mashup. You know, when I try to identify the category of this particular book, it's kind of impossible. It's, you know, personal essays, it's art, it's photography. But when you try to label it under one heading, you just can't. And so it's the kind of work that really reflects this, you know, we're calling this liminal space which is sort of a nondescript, it's neither here nor there, it's everywhere kind of identity. And we're, you know, I'm very interested in books that kind of are cross genre like this. So absolutely, I'd love to connect with more artists in the future.
Yeah. Well, I love this project. And how can people get the books?
So they are available on our Toad Hall Editions website, which is toadhalleditions.ink. But there's also more information about the book on my website, which is mayastein.com. And we're really just selling them, you know, through those two places and actually through the Toad Hall Editions website and doing more local, trying to get some local bookstores here in the Midcoast to carry them. But, you know, at some point, it'd be really fun to do a sort of book tour with this and also, you know, and to meet up with the artists and wherever they live and kind of have this conversation with them about the experience too, you know, live. So I'd love to think about doing that when it's a little easier to travel.
Yeah, I know. So did you get your vaccine?
I did. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that has surprised me since I got the vaccine was how what I thought I would feel like, which was still this very sort of edgy, not want to be around people, you know, keep your distance. I mean, so much of that was, I just am surprised that I feel so much easier in settings that have more people around. And, you know, it's a little strange, but it's very hopeful. And so I think, hopefully, you know, it's exciting to think about more in-person gatherings and opportunities to be together again and share our work live. So,
yeah. Well, I love this project, and everybody, you can find in the show notes, I will have Maya's information and website, stuff like that. And some of the imagery from inside the book, which you really have to see because it's amazing. So we'll have that on the website in the show notes. So thanks, Maya. I really enjoyed talking with you. And I'm glad you have your vaccine and life is sort of getting back to normal. I think it'll be really interesting to see how this book, the impressions of it are going to sort of morph as the world opens up more and more and more. You know, it's going to be an interesting trajectory with that. But I'm excited for you and your project with Toad Hall, and definitely keep me posted with everything.
Thanks so much for having me here, Jen.
Yeah, thanks for spending an hour with me. I really enjoyed talking to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting this podcast. Your support means everything. If you'd like to learn more about the Artist Alliance community, send me a question, or learn about other events or projects coming up, please visit my website at www.gentuff.gallery. See you next time.